Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for The Christophers, and today I'll be chatting with Katie Driscoll, a photographer and mom whose daughter with Down syndrome inspired her to start a movement that changes the public's perception of beauty. After that, I'll be joined by author Gary Drabelbus, who'll discuss his book, The Gospel According to Sesame Street. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi. As the mom of a daughter with Down syndrome, photographer Katie Driscoll noticed that she rarely saw advertisements featuring kids with disabilities. She then co-founded a campaign called Changing the Face of Beauty. Its purpose was to encourage advertisers to highlight more individuals with disabilities in their work. Well, that campaign for more diversity has paid off, and more companies are taking up Katie's challenge. Joining me now to talk about her mission, I'm pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Katie Driscoll. Katie, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Now, before we talk about changing the face of beauty, I want to start with Grace, your daughter with Down syndrome, who inspired this whole movement in a way. Take me back to the time when you found out that Grace had that extra 21st chromosome. What went through your mind, and did you know anything about Down syndrome at the time?
Well, that's a great question, because I did have a prenatal diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I knew that my baby would be born with Down syndrome. And at the moment that I received the news after my ultrasound that there was a high probability that this child would be born with that extra chromosome, the first image that popped in my mind was Chris Burke from Life Goes On.
Sure, okay.
And Lauren Potter from Glee.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't realize that the time, how powerful that moment was, actually. But no, I had no experience with anyone that had Down syndrome. And so my mind just immediately went to that that media image.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a few years ago, I interviewed an author named Amy Julia Becker, who she wrote a book about having a daughter with Down syndrome, and it was called A Good and Perfect Gift, because that's how she came to see her daughter after the initial feelings of fear. How has Grace become a gift to you and your family? Not necessarily in spite of her Down syndrome, but maybe even because of it.
Well, our lives are completely different because of Grace. And I guess that's why I love her name so much, because she did give us Grace.
Yeah.
She made us different people. And when I was carrying her, I had zero exposure to the disability community. You know, aside from maybe seeing people in public, I had never had a lot of interaction
mm-hmm.
with the disability community. So to say there was fear there would be an understatement.
Sure.
I was absolutely fearful of differences because I had no exposure. So when I found out my daughter had Down syndrome, you know, as a typical mother would do, you know, I just dug in and I was like, well, you know, this is going to be different for my daughter, and I'm going to make sure that, you know, that this doesn't hold her back, and that I'm going to have the same expectations for her as I have for my other children.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think I've wavered from that. And that's really why Changing the Face of Beauty exists. We work hard, families in general, with disability or without. But, you know, when you do have those obstacles, you really dig in and you try to figure out ways to compensate for the deficiencies that come along with disability. And over the years, you know, we know more, so we do more. And, you know, my thought is, here we are working so hard to enable our daughter to have a independent and good life. I want to make sure that there's opportunity for her to reach for, you know, when she's ready to reach. And so to say we're a more compassionate family unit, definitely. We're aware of our surroundings. We're aware of the people surrounding us, and the blessings, just I couldn't even begin to name them all. So
right.
So yes.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Katie Driscoll. She's the founder of Changing the Face of Beauty. The website is changingthefaceofbeauty.org. You know, one of the founding principles of the Christophers was that people should stop simply complaining about what's wrong with the world, but rather take the initiative to make it better. And that's really what you've done with the Changing the Face of Beauty movement. So tell me, how did you get the idea to start it, and how did you get it off the ground?
Sure. Well, I initially, you know, after five boys, I, you know, when I was having a daughter, I knew that, you know, I was looking at catalogs and I was shopping, obviously. And so, you know, in that process, I became aware of the lack of representation. And I started a blog and picked up my camera and documented our life because I wanted to make sure that people around me knew that we loved our daughter and regardless of her disability, and that, you know, we wanted the same things for her as we did our children. And so so through that process, and there was definitely an evolution of Changing the Face of Beauty from where it was and where it is today, but initially, you know, people started responding and telling me that, you know, I had a gift of capturing grace and other people with disability in a very natural, positive way. And they felt like I should take that and kind of share it outside of our community. And so that's where Changing the Face of Beauty was born. It was born from a conversation with Steve English and myself. He also had an adult son at the, with a disability. And we, you know, talked about the lack of exposure of our kids and how that probably inhibits a lot of opportunity. And so from there, we started a social media movement, and which evolved into the point where I had, you know, press asking me, well, who have you influenced? You know, why? What have you done thus far? And I hadn't influenced anyone really. So I knew that I had to put my neck out there and ask for people to raise their hand and change. So we launched that in 2015. I asked retailers to raise their hand and commit to including at least one model with a disability in 2015. And by the end of 2015, we had over 125 companies that raised their hand and said yes. And you know, completed the task at hand. There was no legal documents to sign. We were just a campaign. And most of them reported back that, you know, it really wasn't that big of a deal, and it was absolutely something they would continue to do. And they were sorry that they had never even thought about the disability community before.
Right.
So, yeah, so at that point, we knew that we were influencing change. And we, at that point, I applied for a nonprofit status and you know, Changing the Face of Beauty nonprofit was born. And now we have partners that are financially as well as, you know, business-wise invested in that change.
Sure. Well, what kind of feedback have you gotten from parents of children with disabilities and even adults with disabilities? Has seeing some of these images in advertising and marketing, has it changed their sense of self-worth to a degree?
I think so. I mean, initially when I started this campaign, you know, I had parents come up to me and say, you know, thank you. I feel bad because I never even thought about it. You know, I never even expected to see my family or my child, you know, represented. And for adults, you know, it's something that, you know, they've struggled with their entire life. And so the thank yous there are, thank you. You know, we've been picking at this for some time now, and it's not okay to continue to ignore, you know, our community. And we appreciate the fact that you've created something that really kind of rallies around the entire disability community. I think what happens a lot of times within the disability community is we work so hard to advocate for our individual differences.
Mm-hmm.
And what really makes us powerful as a group is that we are the largest minority in the world.
Yeah.
So if we came together and said we're not standing for this anymore, we wouldn't be standing. And so Changing the Face of Beauty is kind of that umbrella that says we don't care what your difference is. We advocate for differences in general to be seen.
Yeah.
So it's something that everyone can you know, rally around and support.
Yeah, I'm talking to Katie Driscoll. Her program is Changing the Face of Beauty. The website is changingthefaceofbeauty.org. How has your definition of beauty changed in the last, say, 5 years from when you started doing this to now?
Well, I think that, you know, when I was pregnant with my daughter, you know, and I had my five boys already, I felt like I was the, you know, the picture of the typical American family. Mm-hmm. And I think that that was a pretty shallow way to look at our family, you know. And for me, it has opened my eyes to the possibility of, basically, the possibilities are endless, and that there is beauty in all people, and to kind of embrace what makes you unique and different. That's not something that I was confident enough to do before my daughter, and definitely before changing the face of beauty. It is the gifts that I've received from being a part of this organization. Are limitless, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know you mentioned before how Grace is an appropriate name for your daughter, and I wonder, I mean, I know changing the face of beauty is open to all people regardless, but for you personally, is there a spiritual dimension to your work on this? Does it mean something to you spiritually or from a religious background?
Well, I mean, no, not for the organization, but for me personally, yes. You know, people will say, you know, things, comforting things, you know, when you're in a situation where your life kind of takes a turn that you didn't necessarily expect. Mm-hmm. But I truly believe that, you know, everyone has a plan and God has a plan for all of us. And this was my plan, and he guided us through it. And I mean, I'm forever grateful that he chose our family to receive such a gift.
Yeah. Well, if anybody listening wants to help change the face of beauty in our culture, what steps would you advise they take?
Well, I mean, we obviously, you can visit our website, but we are currently in the process of traveling across the United States and a little bit around the globe with pop-up organized photo shoots where we give aspiring models with disabilities the opportunity to come together and get quality headshots to be able to influence the talent industry. Mm-hmm. Part of changing the face of beauty is having available talent available to ad agencies and corporations that are looking to integrate. And unfortunately, the talent agencies right now are not accepting of differences. So hosting headshot clinics in your area is one way. We are developing a stock imagery database right now that will hold positive depictions of and natural depictions of people living with disabilities for organizations and companies to be able to use that stock imagery in their advertising campaigns. Right now, if you were to go to stock imagery databases and Google disability, you would be very disappointed in the depiction. Mm-hmm. We hope to change that, and we believe that's the fastest way of getting more disability represented in the general media the quickest.
Right.
And then, you know, word of mouth. Hey, I mean, contacts, you know, if you have your, you know, you have contacts in the industry that you feel could be influenced, you know, we want to know them, and we definitely want to reach out to them.
Right, right. Last question. At the Christophers, we use the motto, it's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. So in your life, when you hit times of darkness, how are you able to light that metaphorical candle and move forward toward a brighter future?
Well, you know, as it pertains to changing the face of beauty, you know, it motivates me when I am discouraged. It motivates me to continue to push forward because I believe passionately that the media can change the world, and it influences everything we do. And so instead of complaining about what's not available to our family or to my daughter, I want to make those changes to ensure that they are available. So I guess it's you know, I just continue to keep my eye on the future. You know, I figure I have 16 years before she's out there asking to interview for jobs. So
right.
If I can, you know, if I can give our world exposure to people like Grace or, you know, people with other disabilities so that, you know, the way that she looks doesn't detour the opportunity to show them, you know, if she's capable or not.
Right. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I've been talking to Katie Driscoll. Her organization is Changing the Face of Beauty, and the website is changingthefaceofbeauty.org. She's already making inroads in making people with Down syndrome and other disabilities more visible in the public eye and making them more accepted and giving them more opportunities. So check out changingthefaceofbeauty.org for all the wonderful work this organization is doing. Katie, thanks so much for sharing your mission today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm Tony Rossi, and you're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I'll be back in a minute with author Gary Drabelbis, who will talk about his book, The Gospel According to Sesame Street. But first, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
In a world with millions of distractions, it's all too easy to lose sight of God in the midst of housework or homework or a hard day at the office. Yet God continues to speak to you, even in your busiest or most distracted moments. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called Listening When God Speaks. It shares stories about people who have learned to recognize God's voice in their lives and offers advice on how you can do the same. To request your free copy of Listening When God Speaks, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi. Everybody's heard of the TV series Sesame Street, but what you may not know is that Father James Keller, the founder of the Christophers, was an inspiration to Joan Ganz Cooney, who created the show. In fact, Sesame Street has more spiritual dimensions than we may realize. That's something that author Gary Drabelbis points out in his book, The Gospel According to Sesame Street. To tell us more, I'm pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Gary Drabelbis. Hey, Gary, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Well, it's a pleasure, Tony. And, you know, you do such great work with the Christophers, and, you know, it's amazing to be on your program.
Well, we appreciate that. And you have done also great work with this new book you have called The Gospel According to Sesame Street. And Sesame Street, it's known as being great educational TV for kids, but there aren't generally any overt religious themes addressed in the show. So how are you able to read between the lines, so to speak, and see that there is a gospel according to Sesame Street?
Well, you're right in that regard. And the show originally was to teach numbers, letters of the alphabet, you know, cognitive skills. But as it progressed, what happened was it got more into feelings and affective things. And the underlying principle, if you look at the last 45 years of the show, is following the golden rule. Mm-hmm. And that's really one of the basis of the show at this point. The other thing is that who is your neighbor? And really, everybody's your neighbor. Originally, Sesame Street was intended for children of poverty.
Right.
And people forget that as far as, you know, it was to be a head start for children of poverty, but it caught on with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where the gospel comes in as far as this program.
Sure, sure. Well, I mentioned in my intro that the Christopher's founder, Father James Keller, helped inspire Joan Ganz Cooney, who created the show about 45 years ago. But flesh out the story a little bit for our listeners.
Well, I can tell you right now, I probably would not be doing this interview with you without Father Keller. That's a stretch, but Father Keller influenced Joan Ganz Cooney when she was in college. And as you know, Father Keller said that people needed to get involved in media, mm-hmm. people of faith, good people. And so she got involved in this whole project as far as Sesame Street. And so my interest in Sesame Street was through Joan Ganz Cooney, the founder and creator of Sesame Street. And it went on from there.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really amazing as far as the whole link continues on.
Sure. Well, what about some of the other early influences in Joan Ganz Cooney's life? Like, I know she went to a Jesuit school and she saw her mother giving sandwiches to homeless men. How did those incidents, you think, affect her life and what she did afterwards?
I think that was really the basis for what she did as far as social justice later on. And the other thing, as far as going to Jesuit schools, she learned very good debating skills from the Jesuits. And so when she had to make a case as far as raising money for Sesame Street, going in front of Congress and congressional hearings, as far as saying, this is why you should support this program. She was amazing. And so I think that early training and also learning from her mother as far as giving back, all that was very important.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking to author Gary Drabelbis about his book, The Gospel According to Sesame Street, Learning Life, Love, and Death. What was the state of TV for kids at the time that Joan developed Sesame Street? Was there an educational component to any of it?
Very little.
Mm-hmm.
TV was basically a vast wasteland, according to the FCC chairman, Newton Minow, mm-hmm. at that point. And TV was there basically to sell products to children. And so there was really very little educational programming going on. Captain Kangaroo, if people remember mm-hmm. the captain,
sure.
There were good things going on in that show, but nothing to the extent as far as Sesame Street. In fact, Joan Ganz Cooney hired people who had worked on Captain Kangaroo to work on Sesame Street.
Okay, right, right. Well, one of the things I found interesting, kind of going off what you were saying, and I also found it amusing, is that Joan discovered that kids who watch TV were able to remember the jingles of beer commercials and repeat them verbatim. Why was that, and how did she use that discovery for more positive purposes?
What was happening at the time is that beer commercials had lots of animation, and they had very catchy jingles, and kids could repeat that. And so she got the idea, okay, why don't we use commercials to sponsor and teach letters of the alphabet, numbers, and other concepts? And it was ingenious. The other thing about Joan was she was inspired by, if people remember this, NBC's Lappin,
okay.
Rowan and Martin's Lappin.
Mm-hmm.
She loved the fast pace of that show. And so Sesame Street was also very fast-paced in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I'm talking to author Gary Drabelbis about his book, The Gospel According to Sesame Street. Now, one of the book's chapters is titled, Jesus Didn't Hang Around with the Cool Kids. So tell me, how does that idea tie into Sesame Street?
This show was intended for children of poverty. It was not intended for middle-class kids, kids basically who had families that would read to them, sing to them, that type of thing. It was intended originally for kids in disadvantaged places, and then it caught on.
Mm-hmm.
So what Sesame Street has done through the years is truly amazing, as far as it really is the rainbow as far as connecting everybody together.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the show made a huge impact in showing diversity among its cast members, not just regarding race, but also disability. How is the show inclusive in that regard? And was it groundbreakingly inclusive in that regard, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Not only racially, but also as far as Linda Bove is hearing impaired. And she was on the show as a character for, I believe, 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she taught sign language to people.
Yeah.
And then the other thing was that they had animated characters, Traction Jackson, who was in a wheelchair and could play basketball despite the fact that he was in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
So they broke ground in that regard, both as far as human characters and also as far as animation.
Sure. I'm talking to author Gary Drabelbis about his book, The Gospel According to Sesame Street. Most regular listeners to this show know that the Christopher motto is, it's better to light one candle than curse the darkness. And if there are two characters on Sesame Street who embody those two polar opposites, it's Big Bird, who is the candle lighter, and Oscar the Grouch, who is the darkness cursor. And ironically, they're both played by the same man, Carol Spinney, who in real life is a very gentle, soft-spoken man. What biblical values do you think can we learn from Big Bird and maybe even from Oscar in some way?
Big Bird is the big yellow seeker. He teaches everybody it's okay to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to, if you don't know something, go ahead and ask the question.
Right.
And then you will learn. He is the big yellow seeker. Oscar the Grouch teaches people that, hey, we're not perfect. There are times where we're out of sorts and we are going to be grouchy, but he comes around.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he could be very positive at times too.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking to Gary Drabelbis about his book, The Gospel According to Sesame Street. And as you point out in the book, one of the few times in the show's history when they had religious advisors was in dealing with the death of the character Mr. Hooper, because the actor who played him, Will Lee, passed away. How did the religious advisors, you think, contribute to what was, I think, completely new ground for Sesame Street at the time?
I think they did it very gently. There's the old saying that the gentle wave wears down the rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what they did. I don't think they were heavy-handed in that. And there were also educational advisors involved, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole story behind that was, originally, they didn't know what to do. They thought they could just write him off as far as saying, well, he retired to Florida.
Yeah.
Or he just moved away.
Mm-hmm.
But they decided to look at the issue head on and deliver it in such a way that children could understand it. And as I write in the book, the Emmy Awards list that as being one of the top 10 shows of all time, mm-hmm. as far as daytime TV,
mm-hmm.
as far as significance.
Yeah, yeah. And it did help, I think, kids just learn about this concept of death, like you said, through a lot of it was through Big Bird, as you point out in the book, asking those questions.
And, you know, I mentioned this and I reference it to people today who saw that show as kids,
mm-hmm.
and they still have tears in their eyes.
Yeah.
When I talk about that and recall that.
Just in our closing minute, tell me, what do you hope people get out of reading The Gospel According to Sesame Street?
I think they look at Sesame Street through a different pair of eyeglasses, a different set of lenses, that there are faith and social justice issues in the show. And sure, it still teaches numbers, letters of the alphabet, still teaches basic skills. But Sesame Street's motto now is making kids brighter, stronger, kinder. And I think that kinder aspect is very important, and that's what they're trying to do.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I've been talking to author Gary Drabelbis about his book, The Gospel According to Sesame Street, Learning Life, Love, and Death. I grew up watching Sesame Street. I'm guessing a lot of other people listening to this show right now grew up watching the show. And I think what we learned from Gary's book is that there is more on the show than meets the eye. We were actually learning gospel values while we were watching this show that was educating and entertaining us. So pick up The Gospel According to Sesame Street from author Gary Drabelbis. And Gary, thanks for being on the show today and sharing your insights with the audience.
It's a pleasure, Tony. Thank you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.